There Ain't No Asylum Here. I don't know if you all know that song by The Clash, Straight to Hell. That's where asylum law went.
It's getting better.
Is it? appeals, motions to reopen, and reconsider. How am I doing on time? What am I doing?
You're good. You're good.
Appeals, motion to reopen, and reconsider. And everything here, we're just trying, you know, throwing it out there for you guys. All of this we're going to go into detail later on. You know, a lot of us have, how many of you now have a robust appeals practice as well when you do? Nobody? You guys aren't doing appeals? Ah, okay. Oh, all right. Well, now we know what we're going to be able to, we're going to be of some use to you then, hopefully.
They win all their cases, unlike we.
Yeah, you win all your cases. Maybe y'all should be teaching this class then. But, you know, so... appeals have been very important in an immigration, in a removal practice, and knowing, you know, the deadlines, obviously, doing this level, the Board of Immigration Appeals, motions for reconsideration, motions to reopen, and understanding the time limitations on all these are, concurrent is a good word for it, but, you know, you don't give up a right to appeal just because you filed a motion to reconsider, or don't, you know, and even as you're taking it up to the federal courts, always keep in mind, anytime you're filing motions to reconsider, always keep in mind that your appeal is going to keep going, your motion to reconsider is not going to stay anything, and, you know, if your client wants to keep moving up the chain, don't forget those deadlines there. We've also run into, especially post-COVID, that problem always existed of the board not sending stuff, but it really got bad during COVID. Or sending stuff, you know, you have a decision dated April 25th, and it's postmarked, you know, June 30th, and you're like, okay, great, thanks. Knowing how to deal with the board in those situations, or even dealing with the immigration judge, I had that a lot with the immigration judge as well. Joint motions and motions sua sponte. When we did this class, a year or two ago, we were like, you're not going to get any joint motions. Trial attorney's not going to talk to you. Don't even worry about it. And now it's very different landscape. So, you know, it's a better landscape, certainly. And then Knowing when you, you know, have some relief in district courts, and circuit courts of appeal. Usually it's circuit courts of appeal if you're just going straight. If you're going just straight appeals, since Real ID, we're going to bypass the district courts and go straight to the Fifth Circuit. They love that. And otherwise, if you have some ancillary challenge, going to the district court. And then we, of course, have, like, one of the best federal litigators on the planet with us.
That's why we bring him here.
That's why we drag him. We drag him here in the middle of the night.
That's why you kept around.
Talk to us about, literally drag him over here in the middle of the night. Entry and admission. It seems pedantic, but there's a very good distinction, and I personally, and probably knowing the character of this group here, we probably drive immigration judges insane when we split hairs about entry and admission. But it is especially important if you have clients who are long-time permanent residents. The difference between entry and admission makes a difference in, you know, if they've left the country or the relief they might be eligible for, or whether or not they're even inadmissible or deportable. Like I said, especially for long-time permanent residents, and I love those cases. Those are the most complicated, but they're also the most interesting, because for long-time permanent residents, we do have the benefit of some Supreme case law that says that the government cannot reach way, way, way back and change the substantive rights of long-time permanent residents on a whim, and so anyway the distinction between entry and admission can mean a lot. And even if your client isn't a long-time permanent resident, the distinction between entry and admission in the Fifth Circuit and in some other circuits can certainly make a difference if your client is going to be eligible for things like readjustment or cancellation of removal or a non-pro-tunk waiver.
And here's, I mean, here's where something like knowledge becomes your best friend, because here's where the master of the rules becomes the master of the game. Because you walk into a courtroom with this type of detailed knowledge, and not even the judge knows the law, because all of our immigration judge corps is relatively new, and they really don't come from an immigration background. Most of the immigration judges right now are either ex-military or ex-trial attorneys, and
some even ex-prosecutors.
And a lot of them come from federal courts. Mm-hmm. And a lot of immigration judges, you know, also just randomly end up being immigration judges. Even if they come from an immigration background, let's say they were an adjudicator. We recently had a district director of USCIS come over to the immigration court.
Really? I would have thought